If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings and welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 392. This is our 2026 Volvo China Open Tips podcast. Paul Williams joins me, Steve Bamford, to discuss this week's DP World Tour action. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Steve.
This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit gambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website where we have an in-depth betting preview for the Volvo China Open. Paul has been in the stats lab pulling together this week's data. We have detailed course form, player form and combi sheets, plus new and old predictor models for the returning DP World Tour action this week. All of our content is available completely free of charge. There is no paywall or registration required. We're available on X. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. On Blue Sky, search for Steve Bamford and Paul Williams. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel where this podcast is available each and every week. If you are listening on this, or on YouTube rather, press that like button and of course subscribe to the channel. Now you guys as listeners power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of a future show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. As you know, we had an absolute... There's just hundreds of, well, maybe hundreds, a slight over. There was tens of reviews came for the Masters. So I'm going to read two at a time for a couple of weeks. This one is from Shay H, and he's in Glenwood, Iowa. The home of Zach Johnson, Iowa, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It's entitled Let's Go. The only podcast I listen to. I love the DP Tour and PGA content together. I swore I would be on Alex Fitzpatrick's first win, but alas, I faded him last week. We've all been there. Keep up the good work and good luck at the Masters. I think it's Rose or Reed. Well, he wasn't too far away with Rose, was he? So, Shay H, thank you for your time on that one.
Thank you.
Second review, this one is from Glenn S. Glenn is in the United Kingdom. Masters Week is upon us. Long-time listener of the pod, usually on YouTube, but I've switched over to Apple Podcasts so I could leave a 5-star review. It's deserved. Hats off to Steve, Paul and Barry for the incredible effort they put in week after week. The level of detail and statistical analysis is second to none. You can tell how much work goes into every episode. Whether you're serious about golf betting or just enjoy the sport, this podcast is an absolute must-listen. Keep up the brilliant work. Thank you, Glenn. That is much appreciated. And also that effort of switching to Apple just to give us a 5-star review, we very much appreciate it.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, thanks to both for those comments. And yeah, good to see that we've had some reviews coming through. As for Alex Fitzpatrick, yes, that was still a fairly sore one to have missed him back a few weeks in the past. So, yeah, we live and learn. As you said, Steve, we've all been there. I'm sure we'll all be there again.
The pain fades slowly, I always find, on losing bets.
Yeah, well, you've always got another week, or fairly regularly got another week to refocus your mind and have another go, reload, and see if you can get it right the following week.
I mean, the RBC Heritage last week was an absolute prime example of pain in the extreme. As our old boss, Paul, many, many years ago, used to say to me, it's like pushing water uphill with a brush. And another one I always like is nailing jelly to the wall. So yeah. Who had you got backed last week at the RBC Heritage? And then I'll go through my ones.
It's difficult to believe how little well, both of us got out of it in the end, but I don't know. I've just kind of flummoxed at the end as to walk away with four selections and to actually pick nothing up at the end of it was just maddening because, yeah, I was on Hovland, who was 13 under after a couple of...
Yeah. He was in the final group Saturday, yes?
He was, yeah. Yeah, I mean, at 13 under after two rounds, 13 under in the end was good enough for a T4 finish. And then he shoots, what, 73, 76 over the weekend and drops right out of it. Brian Harman, he was third going into Sunday. Shot that fantastic round on Saturday to give himself a sniff and then shoots 76. And Sepp Straka was third going into Sunday and then he shoots 78. I mean, in the end, my best finisher was Keegan Bradley, who finished one shot off the places.
What odds were the? I know I'm throwing you under the. I'm throwing you under a bus here. But what various odds did you have on those players? Because Harman must have been a very big price. I would have thought Bradley was in what 66 is something along.
No, there? Bradley was longer than that. Harman, was he 80 or 100 something like that? I got him early. Bradley was a little bit longer, I think. Straka was around 40s. That's Hovland, right. 35, I think, from memory.
And they're all within touching distance of winning that tournament at various points, and you end up with zero return.
Yep.
That's golf betting.
That is golf betting. Infuriating sometimes. Maddening. Yes. What can you do? You can take a horse to water, Steve, if we're carrying on the analogies.
I had Matt Wallace, who hit the lead on Thursday and then instantly threw in a double and a bogey. I mean, when you're starting to panic on a Thursday, I have actually made... we're killing time here, listeners, because effectively we've only got the Volvo China Open to talk about. We haven't got Barron. And also, we're not covering the Zurich team event because I always have a week off this week. So that's why we're kind of filibustering here. I often think with this golf betting situation that it's a momentum thing. And I don't know if it's positive thinking or negative thinking. But I had Scottie Scheffler last week. Now, I got dogs abuse on various different social media channels because, you know, you can't be putting Scottie Scheffler up. That's all fine and good. I'm happy with that. But one thing you do say about Scottie Scheffler, he is that player that when you see him four or five shots off the lead on a Friday evening, you sit there and you go to Betfair Exchange and you see that he's 17-1 and you think, do you know what? I cannot see that price not contracting over the next 2 days. Because as he's alluded to, and as it's plainly obvious at the moment, he's struggling on a Thursday. So for him to double bogey, he hit it out of bounds on the first tee.
Yep.
And for him then to inevitably get into a playoff with Matt Fitzpatrick, I thought was incredible, really. It's noticeable with Scheffler that his putting is very, very strong again. I mean, he was rolling in regular 15, 20 footers for birdie. It's actually, and you've mentioned this pre-Augusta, it's his approach game that still isn't top draw.
Yeah, it's noticeable, isn't it? It's noticeable statistically and to the eye as well, which it's scary given that, as you say, he's finding a way to getting himself into contention anyway, even with the poor starts that he is regularly posting nowadays. And you know, when he puts it all together again, the week that he goes off and shoots 63 in the first round, everyone else pack their bags and disappear, I think.
Harking back to Wallace, where I was heading before I went off on this tangent, I genuinely think that I need to review my post-it note of doom. I think there could be some new additions. I don't know if you're going to put Victor Hovland on yours, but... You'd like to think with Victor, he's got majors in him in the future, so that'd be a churlish thing to do. But you do bump into players when you're backing them that you you have such bad experience with them, you just don't want to back them ever again.
Yeah, Straka's 78 was just maddening again because, you know, he finds himself.
He's done it a lot this year in 26. He's had terrible Sundays.
Yeah. And again, perhaps it is just a mentality thing, Steve, where players get into a mental rut and the same outcome plays over and over again. It's like,
well, like Shane Lowry.
Well, yeah. There's a number you could say, like they're falling into the same trap each and every time. And you know, Scott is coming out of the blocks, as you say, out of bounds on the first hole. And is that you're working yourself up? I must have a good start. First shot, bang, gone. And then he's playing catch up from there. The flip side is that he knows that when he's been doing that, he's still finding a way to get himself back into contention.
Yeah.
But yeah, Straka's 78. He can and does win, and disproportionately, I guess, for the chance that he's often given at the start of a tournament, he can and does win golf tournaments. But yeah, disappointing from the position he was in. Disappointing from Harman. Yeah,
we're not covering the tournament, but what are the chances that Brooks Koepka's return victory on the PGA Tour is in tandem with Shane Lowry, who can never win when he's on his own in a final round? It's almost like you could just see that happening so much.
Yep. Yeah, I saw they were joint favourites or second favourites, weren't they? And it's one of those scenarios that you can see playing out. But Fitzpatrick's a favourite, I see, for that, which is not surprising given the month that those two boys have had. Very, very strong.
Talking of Fitzpatrick, that was his fourth PGA Tour victory last week. Just eyeballing the courses in the States, all on short, two victories at Harbortown, or medium length golf courses, Brookline and Copperhead. Three of his victories have now come on Bermuda Poa Trivialis overseeded putting surfaces for you agronomy geeks out there. I believe, from memory, Brookline was bent Poana. You've got to say with Fitzpatrick, I think he's up to third in the world now.
Yep.
He, for me, is when he's in good nick, he's an absolute lock for winning a Players' Championship in the future.
Yeah, I can see that.
I mean, let's be frank. I mean, he came close a couple of weeks ago, didn't he?
Mm.
Also, if you're going to choose another major for him, he's got to be in the mix for an Open Championship moving forward. Don't forget, he won the 2023 Alfred Dunhill Links.
Yeah. Yeah, potentially. Potentially. He's in that kind of form, isn't he? And, you know, his game right now is in a fantastic spot. I mean, just looking at some of the stats from last week, he was top 12 for all strokes gained categories, every single one of them. And that's a pretty mean feat to be not just positive in each category, but to be kind of excelling in each category. And he's hitting a long way, you know. In old money, first for total driving last week. So we know he can hit it straight, but to be hitting it straight and long enough to top that category for Matt Fitzpatrick. There's a hell of a player there. As you say, third in the world, second in the FedEx Cup I saw yesterday. So he'll have aspirations of a huge season from the position he's in right now.
Yeah. I like to just try and think out. Just with the hurly-burly week after week, it's very easy to get sucked into very short-term thinking. But sometimes it's just nice to have a clean sheet and say, where do you think Fitzpatrick can go from it? One of the reasons I didn't actually back him last week, there were two. Firstly, if you look at his previous record, he'd never really pieced together two quick successive wins. And I know for a fact that you last year picked up on Ryan Fox. The fact that he, in his career previous, had won quickly in a short space of time. You didn't get that with Fitzpatrick. They were literally, I think the closest I saw was a win at sort of March, springtime, and then he got another one the same year in October. But let's be frank, And we mentioned it last week. You mentioned it as well. This link between Harbour Town and Copperhead, the Valspar, is just incredible. And I just think the way that it worked out, that he had two fantastically great courses that are very similar within a month of each other. Both side of a Masters where he's gone in as one of the favourites, has kind of flunked his lines on Thursday and then played very nicely for the rest of the tournament. He's just gone there with no pressure on his shoulders on his favourite golf course in the world. And before you know it, don't forget he was partnered with Scheffler on Thursday and Friday, the world number one.
Mm.
That was a proper win at Harbour Town. You know, he's played 54 holes with the world number one and he's beaten him.
Yeah,
impressive. Very impressive.
I don't think we should underestimate the performance at the Masters either, because none of us fancied him because of the way that the course was setting up and, you know, his low ball flight compared to the, you know, optimal high flight. And for him to finish, what did he finish, 18th or something 18th. Like that in the end? Yeah. So, I mean, that's no disaster when the course isn't setting up for your style of play.
There was a lot of smoke about him, though, prior, wasn't there? A lot of people was thinking Fitzpatrick would win, but I don't think he'll win a Masters. He hasn't got the game.
No, he's certainly better suited to the US Opens and the Open Championships, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was no disaster. And as you say, he's come into a course that he's openly said is his favourite and gets himself another jacket. Impressive.
Talking Scheffler, who lost in the playoff, he's now had four career playoffs on the PGA Tour. His record is 2-2. He beat Patrick Cantlay, I'm not going to snigger, 2022 WM Phoenix Open. I think that was his first ever victory. And then he beat Tom Kim, who regulars will know. Clearly, I was on Tom Kim that week. He finished second at the 2024 Travelers. And then he's lost to, I don't want any sniggering at the back here either, Sam Burns in the 2022 Charles Schwab Challenge. They are best mates. And now he's lost to Matt Fitzpatrick at the 2026 RBC Heritage. So 2-2 record in playoffs. But I'm still going to talk about this success rate that he's got. Bearing in mind, he's now finished second at the Masters and second at the RBC Heritage. So 15 wins in his last 45 starts. Doesn't take a mathematician to work out that's a 33% success rate. That goes back to the 24 Arnold Palmer Invitational at Bay Hill. Plus, he's finished second or third in a further 8 of those 45 starts. So work that through. Scotty wins or finishes in the top 3 51% of the time. Not bad record, is it?
No, it's not. As we've said, he finds a way to get himself into those positions from wherever he ends up after the Thursday round.
The problem is, next week we've got this new, or returning, shall I say, Cadillac Championship in Miami on the Blue Monster at Trump Doral. The PGA Tour have clawed that back. We're not going to talk about the LIV Tour debacle, but they've clawed it back from LIV.
Mm.
So great golf course, tough golf course. If the wind blows, it's going to be an absolute feast of golf next week. But you could just see Scheffler rolling up at 3-1 and taking that out.
Yeah.
It's frustrating to back him and then he finishes second. It's just, oh, well. What do you do?
It's one of those. You're damned if you do, and if you're damned if you don't. Everyone's going to have a view as to whether you kind of go down that route and back him or whether you just try and oppose him each week and hope he doesn't have a stronger success rate than he has. Because if you're opposing him, you're going to accept that he is going to win 1 in 3, which is just as you've articulated.
Yeah. And a few weeks ago, that was up at 40%. So, yeah.
Mm.
Interesting. But yes, two fantastic players contending last week, Scheffler and Fitzpatrick. Paul was all over it. That was unlucky. I had Ludvig Åberg as well, who thankfully was first round leader. Not that I had a penny on that, but he did hang around. Had a bit of a dodgy Friday. or should I say back nine on Friday. But from there, he did have the audacity to hang around and get me a full each-way payout at 22-1. So it was a complete write-off.
Mm.
I just don't know about Ludwig. It's like, I don't know. He's clearly a very talented golfer. He's going to win lots of golf tournaments. I think we kind of, because he's been around from such a young age, he's learning on the job. Mm. But yeah, he's going to be, you know, again, he'll be for the Blue Monster next week, what, 20-1?
Yeah, well, yeah, no better than that.
And the course will suit. I don't know, it's just tricky, isn't it? It's very, very easy to back players that don't actually get over the line. But you just know with Ludwig at some point, very soon, well, you think he is, he's going to just win a tournament or two.
Yeah.
So do you stay loyal or do you not stay loyal? Because you know what happens. As soon as you don't back him, he'll win.
Yeah, well, you've got a scenario this week where a lot of the players won't have played Doral for a number of years. So it does level the playing field to a certain degree.
Yes.
But then you will have players, some of the older, more established players who do have some experience of it from days gone by. You've got the guys who enjoy Florida golf in general, that kind of style of golf, which you know, can lead you down a certain path. Should be interesting. Good to see the course back on the schedule as well, as you say.
Yeah, just almost like a bit of pre-research. I mean, here's a list of players that won at Doral going back to 2007. So, you know, just to get things working through them. The field is going to be, it's a signature event, so the field is going to be very, 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 very similar to what we saw at the RBC.
Mm.
I expect, I don't know for sure, but you would assume that Justin Rose will play, and you'd assume, although that isn't guaranteed, that Rory will play. Although you might think that Rory will just wait and play Quail Hollow.
Mm.
Don't know.
We'll see.
He picks and chooses his events, like, you know, that's Rory's one, and that's he can do whatever he wants. But the winners here, 07 Tiger Woods, 08 Jeff Ogilvy, 09 Phil Mickelson, 2010 Ernie Els. And then we moved into Nick Watney in 11. Justin Rose won here in 2012. When I say here, I mean Doral. Tiger Woods again in 13. Patrick Reed, your old mucker, in 14. DJ in 15. And the last time we saw this as part of the World Golf Championship was Adam Scott in 2016. He beat Bubba Watson. And just for kind of, Bubba Watson was runner-up in 16, 14 and 12. I mean, it screams Augusta to me. Scott, Bubba Watson, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Tiger Woods, Justin Rose.
Yeah. Yeah, some comparables there.
Yes. So there's plenty to go through. I've got some names in mind for next week that aren't Scottie Scheffler. And so it might be building together kind of a bit of a bigger price card and seeing Scottie win by five. But it's just interesting to cogitate over next week, because I think it's going to be a big event on the PGA Tour as we move towards this PGA Championship. Right.
Mm.
Enough of all this. Let's actually talk about this week's action. We are back on the DP World Tour. It's been a few weeks, hasn't it, Paul? No action.
Yeah, they do like to have these breaks around. Well, certainly the Masters. And we've not got the same for the PGA Championship because it runs all the way up to the PGA, but yeah, they do like to give the Masters a bit of a wide berth, don't they, over on the DP World Tour?
I think it works, though. They need a break, and clearly the DP World Tour tends to be stronger both in tournaments and field strength, kind of from late summer through to the end of the year.
Yeah, it picks up the reins, yeah.
It certainly gains momentum, doesn't it? So we're returning to what they classify as the Asian swing. And we've got, you know, a tournament here that's been around for many, many years. And it's good to see Volvo back involved. The Volvo China Open. So take it away.
Yeah, as you say, last two legs of the Asian Swing. So we've got the China Open this week, and then we're off to Turkey the following week. And that's then the point at which we hit the mainland Europe events. So start to get some of the more regular venues that we've seen in the past. We start in Barcelona for the European leg. So that will take us up to the Aronimink-hosted USPGA Championship. Nice spell, I think. Once we hit mainland Europe, I think it feels like the DP World Tour really gets into its stride, because, as you've just alluded to, it's a bit bitty, isn't it, for the first month or two or three on the DP World Tour nowadays, with gaps and hopping about from continent to continent. Mm-hmm. But yeah, China Open first, and as you say, one of the more established events on the circuit goes back to 1995, so there is lots of history. But the venue this year, Enhance Anting Golf Club, it was used for the first time last year, so do bear that in mind. It's co-sanctioned with the China Tour, so we've got a proper mix of players this week. Some DP World Tour, of course, and then more than a smattering, a whole host of local players in this full field of 156. But as we've seen historically, and as we see again this week, it's the DP World Tour players that tend to dominate the betting. So we've got Angel Ayora, who is the marginal favorite this week, around 11 to 1. Daniel Hillier, been backed in a little from 12s down to 11s now. Oliver Lindell, 18 to 1. Eugenio Chakra, 20 to 1. I'm sure Shakira will be popular this week, flying straight back from a Corn Ferry Tour tournament over in Mexico that he played up until Sunday. So I think top 10 there. So, you know, some decent form coming in. But of course, you've got to factor in the travel potentially back from Mexico and the time difference and what is effectively an early start in China, etc. Jorge Campillo, 22 to 1. Wen Yi Ding, Ewan Ferguson, 25s, and then you got the likes of Tristan Lawrence and Andy Sullivan at 33s, 40 to 1. Bar those players, and of course we've got some extended places with no regular PGA Tour event this week. You've got the pairs event, of course, but no standard PGA Tour event. Some of the bookies have pushed their each way places out a little bit. Coral and Ladbrokes have gone 7 places each way, a fifth of the odds as standard. Betfred have gone, they've got 8 and 10 place options. And of course, Bet365 have 8, 10, and 12 place each way options this week.
If you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their Bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion, plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in the podcast description. Visit golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365. That's golfbettingsystem.co.uk/365 for £30 of free bets with Bet365.
Lovely.
Very
job.
Good.
Fantastic segue there, Steve.
Thank you.
But yes, so yeah, do shop about. There are some extended terms this week, and as I say, it's a full field, so you can get some of your fancied longer prices in potentially with some additional places if that is your want.
Or this new style of betting where you take the 3 places each way and get the better prices. There's so many different ways of cutting it with 365. You know me, I always like the... I think last week I went with Wallace 10 places rather than 8. Mm. There's all different ways of cutting it. But I know a lot of people, especially over in the States, people that... I mean, each way is quite novel over in North America. And they're using these 3 places to get better odds. But you've still got that second and third place cushion, where if you're just betting flat on winners, there's flexibility there.
Yeah, it's an interesting market, isn't it? And as you say, I've seen quite a few of the... it seems to have taken off a bit more over in the States than it has over here, but But yeah, with players that you can see, I mean, Scott is a great example, isn't it? Where if you ended up managing to get what you felt was a more backable price, but with just three places that was acceptable to you, then you could go down that route. But yeah, some of the prices are wild, aren't they? If you push them out to that kind of level, so. Each to their own. You play it how you see fit, and you know a lot of punters will prefer to go down the more extended terms route, particularly with the full field events. But yeah, worth taking a look for sure.
I mean, I'm looking at Daniel Hillier right now. He's 9-1 in the Bet365 eight places market. But if you want to take three places and a fifth the odds, he's 16-1.
Yep.
Now. Best price anywhere else in the market over here in the UK, I'm seeing 11-1 at Ladbrokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're getting a five extra points on the odds with Bet365 on their three places market.
Yeah. I mean, the point with that is you have to place it each way. So you can't just nab the win only element of that.
No.
But if you can see a player finishing, you know, top three at very worst, then yeah, it's an interesting way to approach it. Yeah, some of the
I might have a think about that for next week with Scheffler.
See what you're getting. See what you're getting.
What do we know about the course then? Because I know it was played last year. Seems to be a lot of water at certain points.
Yeah, we did see it. It was the first time that we saw it last year. So yeah, do bear that in mind if you're using the Combi stats or the event stats pages on the website this week, because it's only last year that's of any real consequence. It's a Robert Trent Jones Jr. design, Parkland in style, but as you say, Steve, lots of water in play. Not particularly long. It can stretch to around 7,300 yards from its tips, but it's listed as a 7,188 yard par 71. So, yeah, maybe just sneaking into the mid-length category, but certainly not long by modern standards. Three par fives, none of which are gimmies, 568, 577, 614 yards for the final hole for the 18th. Of course, they can chop and change the teeing positions if they so choose. So you might see some more attackable par fives, particularly on the Saturday, potentially. 11 par fours, five of which are under 400 yards. So again, there are some, which are not necessarily drivable, but certainly attackable with a very short iron, wedge, whatever. The par threes are tough, though. I aggregated the scores up for last year, and for the whole field on aggregate played 470 over par for the par threes last year.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's madness.
That is... Just eyeballing it, it looked like it was tough. And then when you do the math, so yes, hang about, find a way to navigate the par threes in as close as you can get to level par, and then go from there. Weather-wise, I mean, we have got some weather coming in this week as well, which is going to make things interesting, potentially different to last year as well. Wednesday looks really wet. And just adding it up, there could be upwards of an inch and a half, maybe even 2 inches of rain before they start on Thursday. And that will be coming down almost until they start playing on Thursday. I wouldn't be surprised if it really does come down at that kind of level, if there's a short delay to the start while they kind of mop the course up and get it ready to play. But if that does materialise, which looks pretty set, I must say, then it's likely to significantly soften the course and make it a slightly different test to last year, which was dry throughout from memory. From Thursday onwards, it improves. The weather starts to brighten up. There's sunshine. We may well get into the low 20s centigrade, so around about the mid-70s Fahrenheit by the time we play on Sunday. Winds are light, 5 to 10 miles an hour throughout, so nothing of any consequence there. It's just likely to play softer and, in that respect, longer, but certainly for the Thursday and probably the Friday, as the course adjusts to the weather or the rain that is received on the... on the day before the tournament starts. But yeah, don't be surprised if you find there's a short delay on Thursday morning. Most of us will be asleep, of course, given the time difference, but there you go. Last year, Ashen Wu, he won here 14 under was his total. 175-1 was the winning price if you managed to pluck that out. Would have been quite a pick because of his incoming form, but there was a little bit to grab onto with Wu, I guess. Statistically, he averaged 288 off the tee, hit 84% of fairways, 79% of greens, scrambled 87% of the time. In fact, he only dropped shots on four holes over the course of the 4 days, so bogey avoidance was pretty key. What is noticeable, that all of the field hit lots of fairways. Wu was 16th in the field with that 84%. So wide old fairways here. I mean, even the more flagrant players in the field were hitting 70% plus. So with soft fairways this year, it could even be higher. It could be I classify it as a second shot golf course anyway, but it could be truly second shot golf course on steroids this week, potentially. From strokes gained perspective, ninth off the tee for Wu, fifth for tee to green, first for around the green. If you look at the top three finishers, that was Ashen Wu, Jordan Smith and Yannick Paul. All of them were strokes gained positive in each category, which you don't see often either. So it didn't necessarily lend itself to a specific style of play. If you were displaying a good all-round game last time or last year, then that was a positive to get you into a contending position. So, yeah, in that respect, different styles of play could win this. It could be easy to get hung up with the Ashen Wu win and assume that that is the only blueprint for success here. But Jordan Smith's a different style of player. I mean, that's borne out by their splits as well. If you look at their splits between par 3, par 4, par 5, ignoring the threes, which we know were tough, Ashen Wu was 10 under for the par 4s and only 4 under for the par 5s. Yannick Paul was 13 under for the par 4s and 1 under for the par 5s over the course of the whole week. That is, so for par 5s to be playing close to par, that tells a story. Jordan Smith, though, 5 under for the par 4s, 9 under for the par 5s. So there are different ways to get round this course, but Wu and Yannick Paul in third certainly did it by maximising their performance on the par 4s rather than the par 5s. So different ways to skin this particular cat, as it were. Now, talked about Wu's form coming in, no real form. He had a best of 20th in his last dozen starts or so nothing of any consequence. A couple of missed cuts leading in, and then he finished 26th in Macau on his last start, open with 66-67. So had shown a little bit of form, just flashed that little bit of form that sometimes you like to see. He was a previous winner of the China Open from years gone by, so you could have made a tentative case for him. But as I say, 175-1 would have been quite an ask. So if anyone did manage to pluck him out last year, very well done to you, belatedly. I mean, for me, the dynamic could change a little this year. Given the pre-event rain, I think it could bring the longer hitters into it a little bit more. But fundamentally, still a second-shot golf course. Maximise hitting the greens, scramble when you miss the greens, and try and make enough birdies. It's not a pushover, the course, by any stretch. It's a challenging course, and I think a low to mid-score winning total is where we should expect it, probably mid-teens, something like that. It may be a little bit better scoring than last year simply because of the softer conditions. But we shall see. I've backed four this week. I'll go for the first two, Steve, because I've got two relatively short ones and then two longer ones, and I'll bring you an after I've...
I've got one.
Yeah, it's one of those weeks where you could kind of leave it alone, but the one that I fancied from the very outset with this, and I suspected he was going to be in and around the favourite position. I worried that he may be coming in too short to back, but in the end, I went win only, Daniel Hillier. Well, 12 to 1 was available early doors. 11 to 1 is still out there right now. So backable, I think. And I think this guy's got such a great chance, Daniel Hillier. He's been playing some great golf for some time now. He closed 2025 with three top six finishes and four starts. And then at the start of 2025, second in Dubai at the Invitational, 26th at the Desert Classic, fourth in Bahrain, 20th in Qatar. And then he went home, won the New Zealand Open on home soil. He beat Lucas Herbert there. I mean, you look at the New Zealand Open, Australasian Tour, and you think, yeah, you know, it's just one of those small events. And yeah, reality is, it is, you know, you've got to take it in context of the levels. But he beat Lucas Herbert there by two. I mean, Lucas Herbert, as we know, is a previous PGA Tour winner, been playing out on LIV, being top 10-ing on the LIV Tour in recent weeks and months. So he's no mug by any stretch. He beat Herbert by two and he was five ahead of third place. So an impressive enough performance there by Hillier to win on home soil. And he just ticks so many boxes statistically for me. Second on tour for greens in regulation, fourth for strokes gained approach, ninth for tee to green. Leads the tour for par four scoring, which I think is of consequence this week, and leads the tour for bogey avoidance, which again, I think is of consequence this week. When you double that up with the fact that it's going to be soft and playing longer, the guy's got enough power and can attack the fives as well. If he performs like he would know he can on the par fours and then takes advantage of the par fives, he could be a long way clear.
He's not short off the tee, is he, Hillier?
No. Going back to old style stats, yeah, you know, in terms of length and accuracy, there's enough of both there. And he hits a stack of greens. It feels like there's another DP World Tour win coming and coming soon. He won the Belfry back in 2023, didn't he? That was 10 under, so that was another relatively tricky test. And of course, we know with the Belfry, that's another course that's heavily reliant on par four scoring, simply because of the way that the course is set up. 36th here last year, 8th going into the weekend. So again, it's just flashed that little bit of form around this course. Last time in China, 9th at the Hainan Classic, 3rd after 54 holes. So it doesn't appear to have any issue with playing in this part of the world. For me, you've got two players at the top there. You've got Ango Ayora and Hillier. And Hillier felt like a far stronger chance, far stronger selection for me. Ayora gets himself into position, but doesn't seem to know or hasn't quite learned how to finish that job off yet, which would be my worry. The only negative you could potentially have about Hillier, I guess, is that it's been a gap since that New Zealand Open, certainly longer than some of the players who played immediately before the tour stopped before the Masters. But for all intents and purposes, most of this field, apart from the locals, haven't played since the week prior to the Masters. The week before the Masters. So, you know, everyone's coming in with a little bit of rust, an element of rust. So, yeah, I can't really class that as a negative. So, yeah, for me, Daniel Hillier at the top. Slightly further down, I've backed Ewan Ferguson. 25-1 generally. I backed him at 22-1 with eight places because I felt that was a significantly short enough differential between the two numbers to justify taking the eight. I backed him here last year, actually. He finished 32nd. Had he had a better final day, he was around the top 20 going into the final day. If he'd had a better final day, then he'd have been in and around the top 10 in the end, and he'd have been even shorter here this week. But we've seen some good performances out of the Scot this year. 9th in South Africa, 6th last time out at the Indian Open. But the most eye-catching element of his game has been his stats, and in particular, for relevance for this week, has been his greens in regulation stats, because he was second for GIR at the South African Open, led the field for GIR at the Joburg Open, and then led the field again at the Indian Open for greens in regulation. And we know with that course there in India. That is no mean feat to get round there with a strong GIR performance. So he is doing exactly what I'd want to see of a player coming into this week's task. And I think he's got a great chance. He's got a solid record in China. We'll see how he goes this week, Ewan Ferguson. Now, my other two are both just into three figures, Steve. So let's bring you in, see where you have pitched your tent this week.
I just want to highlight something here as well. Mm. I mean, it's just detail rather than anything else. But for the third season running, the leading three DP World Tour members will qualify for this year's USPGA Championship at Aronimink. That's during this Asian swing.
Yep.
So clearly, Alex Fitzpatrick. And who was the American that won?
Oh, Gumbo again.
Yeah. They'll be very high in that number. You cannot find it on the DP World Tour. And AI couldn't find it either. So, but there is, I mean, someone like a Hillier hopefully winning this week, something like that. There's a big carrot here. Basically, the three best DP World Tour players over the Asian swing get to play the PGA Championship. So there are carrots there. I'll tell you the player I've gone for. Precocious talent. You mentioned him very, very early on this year. Might have even been at something like the Dubai Invitational, the first tournament of the year. Precocious. This lad has recorded 9 professional wins, 7 last year, throwing 2 amateur wins, and became the 2025 China Tour Order of Merit winner. 3rd at the Hainan Classic in March. His first DP World Tour top 10. He then played a Chinese tour event last week. I'm not even going to try and pronounce it, but he finished 2nd. So he's clearly in decent nick. He was 43rd here last year when not even a tour member. Yan Han Zhu. 40-1 with Ladbrokes, 7 places each way. That is available right now as you record the podcast as well. This lad's precocious, so clearly, he got that 3rd place finish at the Hainan Classic, so could handle the pressure of playing at home in a DP World Tour event. Don't really see much difference this week. So, long, hitting plenty of greens at the moment, and he's in decent, strong nick. So, yeah, 40-1 with Ladbrokes. I've gone for Yan Han Zhu.
Yeah, talented boy. Just turned 18 as well. I mean, for him to have to have accumulated the wins that he has over this period of time, as
you know, feels like a bit of a phenom.
Yeah, he is. Seems to be moving up the rank or moving up the golfing ladder at a rate of knots. And yeah, that gave him his DP World Tour card for this year. That performance over in the China Tour last year, as you'd expect. So, if he can get himself a breakthrough on the DP World Tour, then yeah, that's another box ticked, and we'll see how far he can go. There's a high ceiling on that one.
I believe when the first prices came out, because clearly I was just clicking my fingers yesterday with no preview to write, I believe Ball Sports priced him at 66-1 on first show, and that lasted, I'd say, 2 minutes.
Yeah, well, it's not going to, is it? It's, you know, there's plenty of people there, plenty of shrewdies out there who know they want to back, and you get a number that's just not appropriate for a player. Then yeah, it's, I could see he's been backed. It was just a sea of blue, wasn't it, against his name? So yeah, he's got a chance. We'll see how he goes.
If you want to be super, super brave, 55-1 with Bet365 in their 3 places market via each way extra.
Well, to be fair, he has finished top 3 in his last 2 starts. So
yes. Interesting.
That would be brave. Yeah, well, good luck with that. As you say, we've kind of touched on him in the past over the last few weeks because his performances in his very short professional career to date have been so impressive, so couldn't put you off. I've gone a bit deeper for my other two. I couldn't forgive myself if I didn't back Alex Levy and he ended up winning what would be a third China Open. 100-1 I got with eight places with Betfred, which felt appropriate. He won this in 2014 at Hidden Grace Golf Club. He won it again in 2017 at Top Win in a playoff. I was on that week. I think that's probably the last time that I've won on Alex Levy. Five times a winner on the DP World Tour, the European Tour, as it was when he was winning back in the day. And is well capable. He's just been hampered by issues, by injury issues, and you know, loss of form that comes with that. But certainly seems to be improving again now. He's got strong wider Chinese form, aside from his efforts here at efforts on the China Open over the years. He's 36th here on this course last year, and that's when he was in pretty poor form. He's in much better nick nowadays. 9th in the Spanish Open before Christmas, 7th in Mauritius, and that was just before Christmas, and then 29th last time out in the Kenya Open. He gets very few starts nowadays, so when he does get a chance to play, it's imperative that he plays and focuses on that performance to get himself primarily into the top 10 so that he can have another start further down the line. And of course, he will have aspirations of getting back onto the tour full time. He finished 140th in the Race to Dubai last year, so that doesn't give him anything in terms of a tangible status. So he's playing here this week on his previous winner status, but perhaps this is the week where he can get his career fully back on track. Alex Levy, I think the pre-event rain helps him as well. We've seen him absolutely bully flat track, sopping wet courses in the past, so let's hope that manifests this week too. The other one I've backed a little bit further down, a little bit more but left field maybe, Marcel Siem at 150-1. Six times a winner on the DP World, or again, when he was winning early doors, it was the European Tour. Typically better on mid-score tests like this, I think. His two most recent wins, the Indian Open in 2023 at 14 under, the Italian Open in 2024, that was at 10 under. He was eighth at the Belfry last year. We talked about the Belfry just a second ago. Led to halfway that week, and I think that's a fairly strong form for this. 13th this year in the Dubai Invitational, 18th last time out at the Joburg Open. I think there's something just bubbling under the surface with CM. And if this, I mean, it didn't play easy this course last year, and I think there are players that want to go out and just make a stack of birdies, and there are players that have the guile and the temperament to just make pars when they need to make pars and not worry that they've failed to take advantage of a par five. And I think CM's in that kind of bracket. Got a good record in China too. He was the 2014 BMW Masters champion. That was at Lake Malaren. I think he could sneak a place at a long price, Marcel CM. So we shall see. So that's CM, Levy, Ewan Ferguson and Daniel Hillier for me. And Yan Hanzhu, you say, Steve?
Yeah, Yan Hanzhu for me.
I wish you luck with that.
Clearly, I can't back Sudhajan Yelamaraju this week. Big Yella.
He's playing in the pairs event, isn't he, I think?
Mm. Yeah, some interesting teams. And clearly, if the Fitzpatricks won this week, I take it that clearly, does that mean that Alex Fitzpatrick will be a PGA Tour member next year?
I believe so, yeah.
Wow.
That would be huge for him. What an incentive for Matt to take his fantastic current form and complement that with his brother and get his brother a leg up onto the main tour.
That'd be nuts, wouldn't it? What a story that would be.
Yeah. Well, the way the pair of them are playing, you can see why they're favourites. It's a good case to be built around their chances this week.
I remember a couple of years ago on Full Swing on Netflix, they did an episode around those two at New Orleans. And clearly, for Alex, it was all around his, my big brother, he's won a major, and I feel this high, you know, size of a grasshopper compared to him. Now, all of a sudden, he's strutting in there, having won his first DP World Tour level tournament. Probably thinking, do you know what? I can really contribute this week and go toe-to-toe with Matt and help.
Yeah, yeah.
Can see it, can't you?
You can. And it's not. I've only given it a five-minute view, but just looking at the teams, it isn't the strongest of tournaments.
No.
There's a massive chance for those two boys to go and take that by the scruff of the neck. It's a volatile tournament, though, isn't it? With the scoring nature and the depth of scoring you have to get to win. But, yeah, wouldn't be surprised.
Indeed. All right, OK. Well, thanks for your time today, Paul. Hope your bets go well.
Yeah, best of luck to you.
Hope bets go well for listeners. We will be back next week, a more normal episode. We have got the aforementioned Cadillac Championship signature event. And of course, on the DP World Tour, as Paul mentioned earlier, we are in Turkey. Always good to go to Turkey. Always used to be a high-level event, didn't it, on the DP World Tour in the autumn?
Yeah, it did, yeah. Yeah. They're playing on a different course this coming
The National
week.
Golf Club, Antalya. Mm.
And tell you, yeah.
Well, no, some of our neighbours go there every year for their 60 degree Celsius holiday in July.
Yeah, might be a bit warm. But yeah, looking forward to that. Actually, Alex Fitz is scheduled to be playing that. So let's see if that actually happens if and when he wins this week.
Cool. We'll see. Turkish Airlines open next week with the Cadillac Championship. So hope everyone's bets goes well. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf betting system, it's the golf betting system.